Welcome to the OFR Farm Report, your look at the Atlanta Braves minor league system, brought to you by OutfieldFlyRule.com, hosted by Andy Harris and Matt Kritzberg.
And this is Andy Harris, and with me is Matt Kritzberg, back from a jaunt to Atlanta. Matt, how you doing, man?
Things are going well, although it's very tiring after a six-hour drive each direction for a one-night stay in Atlanta, but it was well worth it.
Yeah, you got a good game. You got a really good performance from Julio Teheran and the bullpen hanging on by the skin of their teeth and a lot of long balls.
And I'm 2-0 in SunTrust Park appearances now.
Oh, well, that's better. That's better than me. You need to get out here more often. It was good. We actually met face-to-face for the first time, had some pretty good brews at the Terrapin Tap Room in the Battery. So good time was had by all. Got to meet his good-looking young man, Brandon, I guess your older son, who was unfortunately just 20 years old and just had to stand around watching us drink beer.
Taunting a 20-year-old, that's one of my favorite pastimes. I just hate that they were out of the Frenchie brew.
Yeah, they said they were out of the blueberry ale that they were brewing from Francoeur's blueberry farm in that by just a week, and they would have it back next week. But fat lot of good that did you.
Exactly. But hey, it was still worth it.
All right. Well, we got some Stripers playoff baseball, or we did. It's over now. So why don't we talk about those guys real quick and kind of what happened. The Stripers ended up dropping the series 3-1, three games to one. The one game that they won was a blowout. It was just they just really took it to the Clippers. But the other games, they mostly got outpitched, and which is surprising considering the relative strengths of their pitching staffs coming into the series. Matt, any thoughts on the Stripers playoff series? Disappointed or kind of what you thought, or hey, that's just the way the cookie crumbles?
I mean, it was a little disappointing in that we didn't get the rotation we would have liked. It was just odd that they called up Bryce Wilson to Atlanta before his game. He was potentially going to be starting game one, brought him up to pitch an inning and a third relief, and then sent him back down immediately afterward. I mean, he did start game four, but by then they were already facing elimination. So that part of it was a little disappointing, although I know being a farm team, they've always lived to be in service of the big league club, but it would have been interesting to see what they would have done at full strength with that before all the call-ups, because they had a number of call-ups before the series even started.
Yes, it was kind of crazy there. Of course, Bryce Wilson was immediately pulled up as soon as the Stripers regular season ended for that relief bit. I think we were both counting on him on being the game one opener. Alex Jackson didn't play at all. He ended up getting called up and put on the 60-day injured list and what looks like maybe a little bit of roster manipulation in order to activate Darren O'Day. They ended up not having Adam Duvall except for the first game because he got called up. And then Austin Riley was activated after the second game. So kind of bit by bit, the roster was whittled away of some key performers. Is that what caused them to lose? I don't necessarily think so, but certainly the starting rotation selections were a little curious.
Yeah, I thought that was odd. I mean, obviously Tucker Davidson starting game one. I mean, that wasn't a terrible decision, but based off what you had, I mean, you had Davidson in game one, Ian Anderson in game two, Kyle Wright in game three, Bryce Wilson in game four. I mean, that's still a solid four to go with. But, of course, even beyond that, before the series even started, you had Jeremy Walker, Chad Sabatka, Johan Camargo, Bryce Wilson, and A.J. Minter all getting called up before the series even started. You mentioned Duvall and Alex Jackson, and then Darren O'Day and Austin Riley each played in two games. So, yeah, it was a pretty definite dent to the lineup. But I just found it very curious, though. They had four starts. And Touki Toussaint wasn't even the mix for those four. And I'm not sure if he'd gone to a game five, if he would have even gotten that fifth game five start in favor of Oscar Ynoa.
Yeah, I wish he'd gone to fifth game just specifically for that, to see who they would have tapped as the starter for that game. It would have been interesting, but still kudos to the Stripers. They had a fantastic season. At least one Striper got rewarded handsomely. Ryan Lamar, as soon as the series was over, ended up getting traded to the Minnesota Twins, who immediately added him to their 40-man roster and called him up to the majors. So Lamar had a really nice year for the Stripers, playing mostly outfield, some DH, and was a key contributor all year. And I assume that the trade was for quote-unquote cash considerations. I assume that's like a dollar. That's usually the way these things work, especially if it's someone that, you know, the Braves obviously didn't have any intention on calling up and probably wasn't going to retain for next year. So congratulations for Ryan Lamar on getting called up to the majors.
Yeah, it was it was just a little blurb that came out on Sunday when announcing the trade. Of course, everybody starts laughing, cash consideration, all that. But it's a pretty nice opportunity for Lamar. I believe it was because Max Kepler got injured in Minnesota. They needed some extra depth in the outfield, and they had an open 40-man spot. So they plug him in there, and he gets to get a MLB paycheck for about 3 weeks. So that's a pretty nice get for him as well. But like you said, I mean, whether he comes back or not, it's a good opportunity for him. And with Waters and Pache going to be probably starting 2020 season in the outfield for Gwinnett, there's probably not going to be a whole lot of room there anyway. So nice year for Lamar, and good luck in moving on.
Yep. And it's not to say that there wasn't some highlights in the series. Probably the biggest one, Christian Pache with the grand slam home run in the third game, the one game that the Braves ended up, or I should say the Stripers ended up winning. John Ryan Murphy also hit a home run that game. And Kyle Wright and Patrick Weigel also really strong in that game. So those were definite highlights. Bryce Wilson, I thought, did a pretty nice job. He allowed a bunch of hits, but Bryce Wilson is such a competitor. I really enjoy watching him pitch, and managed to kind of weave his way in and out of the lineup, and kind of got stronger as the game went on. Unfortunately, Jason Creasy couldn't hold the lead, and so that ended the Stripers' postseason.
Yeah, and when you start to see Wilson's pitching line, he gave up 10 hits in 6 innings, and when you see, okay, he gave up 10 hits over that time frame in the International League, you're almost afraid to look in the run column to see how bad it would have been, but he only gave up 3 runs, so he did a very good job of scattering those hits around, and he only walked one, so he did a good, like I said, he did a good job of weaving in and out of trouble. I mean, that's just kind of a capper to a very good year for Bryce Wilson.
And then, it's probably Tucker Davidson getting the game one start was the biggest surprise. Nothing against Davidson, but he is, you know, probably the least experienced of the bunch there. I guess he and Anderson, and Anderson got game two. You knew that they would definitely get Anderson in there at some point, just because of how well regarded he is within the organization, and they no doubt wanted to see him in that kind of situation, and Davidson too. And in the end, regardless if it's the playoffs or not, this is about testing players and putting them in these situations and seeing how they respond. So, and in the end, as you said at the very beginning, the minor leagues are there to service the major leagues. So that includes the playoffs.
Yeah, the only other curious thing I saw in there, Pache had a nice series for the time he played. He was 5 for 12, 2 doubles, and a home run. The one curious thing I saw was that he was only a pinch runner in game one. It's like, I thought that was a little odd that he didn't even start the first game of the series. I mean, he may have been dinged up or something, so it could have been easily something more to that, but I thought that was interesting. But he did finish out the year on a very strong note. He came on probably towards the last week or two of the season, and really, after he had a little dip at Gwinnett, he kind of turned it up some there at the end.
Yeah, I makes me wonder if he had like a nagging injury or something like that, because I can't imagine why he wouldn't be in there, even with a crowded outfield that also at that point included Austin Riley and Adam Duvall, Andrew Waters, and Ryan Lamar. So lots of guys to get at bats.
But all in all, a good season for the Stripers, and now all their guys are going to be off winter ball or doing other things. And of course, a few coming to Atlanta, I'm sure.
Yes. Okay, and the other kind of bit of news we have here, on Sunday, the Braves announced their organizational pitchers and players of the year. And basically, not a lot of surprises here, but we'll just discuss it a little bit. Gwinnett, player of the year, outfielder Rafael Ortega, and pitcher of the year, Bryce Wilson. I think Wilson was the obvious selection here. He was the International League ERA champion. Ortega is a little bit of a surprise. I probably would have guessed Adam Duvall here, but they decided to go with Ortega, who had a great year as well.
Yeah, I think that was more about rewarding, even though he's not a prospect. I mean, he's a minor league player that they wanted to reward for having a good year. It may be a little awkward to give that award to Adam Duvall and him being in an Atlanta uniform.
And then for Mississippi, the Braves cheated a lot. They chose Christian Pache and Drew Waters as co-winners of Mississippi Player of the Year, and Ian Anderson and Tucker Davidson as co-winners of Pitchers of the Year, which is kind of funny because they also named Ian Anderson the Organizational Pitcher of the Year. So I'm not sure how you can be co-winners of your team's Pitcher of the Year, but be the only Organizational Player of the Year.
I'm sure somebody somewhere is demanding a recount.
I hope so. If I was Ian Anderson, I'd say, why are you honoring that loser, Tucker Davidson? I'm Organizational Pitcher of the Year. I should be Mississippi Player of the Year, too.
Maybe he doesn't like the share.
I wouldn't.
I thought it was really interesting, though, of course, that all four of those guys were considered co-winners. And coincidentally, all four of those players were promoted on the same day to Gwinnett back in early August.
Yeah, and, you know, all four of those were just fantastic this year. I mean, we'll talk about kind of the biggest surprises and the best stories and biggest disappointments of the season for us here in a little bit. I imagine among the good parts of that conversation, the names Pache, Waters, Anderson, and Davidson will come up a lot. So, I'm just giving the Braves some grief here for not picking a winner here. In Florida, we got an interesting selection here. We got outfielder Trey Harris, even though I'm pretty sure that he had more at-bats with Mississippi than Florida. And then we had pitcher of the year, left-handed pitcher Hayden Deal. Any thoughts about these guys?
Harris is especially interesting. Of course, he got Organizational Player of the Year. But, I mean, especially in Florida, there weren't a whole lot of choices to go around. So, you probably had to just take the most obvious guys in those respects. Although in Deal's case, you could have gone a little other directions too, but he could have gone with somebody like Kingham or with all the dominating performances he had, but it's still not a bad choice in any case.
No, I think Deal's a very fine choice. He was definitely the best pitcher, you know, at least in the first half of the season, and he was solid in the second half. You could have gone Phil Pfeiffer here as well, I think. But Hayden Deal's a good selection. And Trey Harris just had a fantastic season as well. It would be weird if he was Organizational Player of the Year but wasn't Player of the Year for any team. So, but in that case, Florida probably makes the most sense.
Say, in the case of Trey Harris, that was actually the third most at-bats he had, because he had more at-bats at Rome, then Mississippi, then Florida.
Yeah, I'm still okay with that. All right. With Rome, they went with Justin Dean as Player of the Year and Dilmer Mejia as Pitcher of the Year. I think they nailed those guys, you know, perfectly.
Yeah, especially with the fact that Justin Dean was at, he had a great performance, but he was at Rome for the entire season, and nobody even came close to matching up with any of his accounting stats.
Yep. And then down in Danville, the Player of the Year was no surprise. Bryce Ball, you know, pretty much dominated. Not just for Danville, but the entire Appalachian League. He was by far the best offensive player down there. Pitcher was a little bit of a surprise. They did not go with the Appalachian League Pitcher of the Year, Mitch Stallings of the Danville Braves, instead going with Ricky DeVito of the Danville Braves.
I imagine some of this is maybe PR related due to draft standing and where they were picked. I mean, it's just interesting, but I mean, obviously it's nice that anybody wins an award, but I just think that I thought that curious myself.
Yeah. Of all the selections here, I thought that was the oddest, even though I do think very highly of Ricky DeVito and he had a good season after being drafted this in 2019. In the GCL, Michael Harris, outfield, and right-handed pitcher Yudi Ascensio. Pitching-wise, not a lot of really standout performances. Ascensio led the team in innings pitched, I believe, and did pretty well. Michael Harris was fantastic and ended up getting bumped all the way up to Rome. So I think that selection was pretty much a no-brainer.
It's the first bit of hardware Harris gets in professional baseball, and I don't think it's going to be the last.
I agree. And finally, down in the Dominican Summer League, outfielder Devi Estrada and right-handed pitcher Rodri Munoz were selected. Estrada, I think, was a very strong choice here. He pretty much carried the offense for a good chunk of the season before kind of fading a little bit late. Pitching-wise, they could have gone a lot of different avenues here, and Munoz is certainly one of those avenues that I think was certainly defensible.
Yeah, I agree there as well.
Okay, well, we have a couple of different topics here, and we're just going to go back and forth talking about a few different things. And the first category I want to talk about is, what was your biggest disappointments in the Braves minor league goings on this year? And Matt, why don't you go ahead and start first?
Okay, I've got a few different things here, so maybe we'll go back and forth a little bit on this. But I think one of the main developments that was disappointing that could have helped the big club this year is the left-handed relief situation in Gwinnett, where Thomas Burrows and Corbin Mao did not really get much of anything going this season. If everything had played out right between either and or both of these players, I think at least one of them would have been in Atlanta by now. But Thomas Burrows was generally ineffective at Gwinnett, and Corbin Klaus was hurt. He may have been hurt all year for all we know, but even when he was active, he didn't pitch particularly well. So I thought that was a bit disappointing. That's where you end up with having to sign guys like Jerry Blevins, and really there's not a lot of left-handed depth at the big club right now because of something like this.
Yeah, that's a good call. I didn't have that down, but that's a really good point. If you had told me that by the end of this year that neither Corbin and Klaus nor Thomas Burrows would have made their major league debut, I would have been very surprised. The fact that neither of them really kind of took the bull by the horns and propelled them into the majors when there was an obvious need for left-handed relief pitching is a pretty big disappointment. All right, kind of along that same line, another left-hander, Luis Jehara, obviously a big disappointment, and a lot of that is injury related, of course, which, it happens. But the fact that the guy that rocketed through the minor leagues in 2017, went from high A all the way to the majors, looked like he was on the threshold of being a mainstay in the Braves rotation for years to come, and just could not get back to the mound. It ended up getting surgery very late in the during the season. I don't know what was playing there, why it took so long to make that decision to get the surgery, and then the Braves just cutting all ties, and in a trade that initially looked like it was going to heavily favor the Braves when we did the Malik Smith and Shea Simmons for Jehara and Thomas Burrows. It's that trade suddenly not looking that great. Malik Smith now leading the major leagues in stolen bases, certainly would have been a very nice fourth outfielder for the Braves or fifth outfielder for the Braves this year. And we get essentially nothing for Jehara, who is now part of the Los Angeles Angels organization.
Yeah, it's very disappointing. But I mean, of course, we don't know the severity of his injury to this day, but we don't know if his shoulder is going to be something that lets him come back spring training next season, or if he shut down for an even longer period. But it's going to be, I mean, I'll still keep up with how his career goes. And I think he's still a very interesting prospect in spite of all what's happened with him.
That slider when it's on and that 99 mile fastball, I mean, everybody was dreaming hard on this guy. So hopefully he can pull it all together. He can get healthy and help somebody. But it's not going to be the Atlanta Braves, and that's a disappointment.
Yes, it is.
All right, Matt, what else you got?
Okay, I've got one more disappointment here. And this is something that could have helped the big club as well. You mentioned Malik Smith. I mean, he could have been the $575,000 version of Billy Hamilton. Another guy that could have fallen in that category too is Ray Patrick Ditter. He had a really, really awful first couple months of the season. I mean, even as recently as June, he was hitting about 130. He was only 3 out of 9 in the stolen base department, and things were going very, very bad for him. But he turned on in the second half of the season. He got his batting average, although it doesn't sound like much, getting up to 203 at the end of the season. But when you're hitting 130 in the first half of the season, I mean, that's a pretty good increase from there. And he still managed a 332 on base percentage with that. Now, his overall stolen base numbers look really good, actually, even after that 3-for-9 start, because he stole 25 out of 27 bases for about the last two-thirds of the season. So, although a lot of this came too late, if he had almost done it in reverse or he'd had that big start to the season, he might have been in Atlanta right now instead of Billy Hamilton getting pinch running and defensive opportunities.
Yeah, that's a good call. At the end of last year, I thought he was about to make a huge move in the organization. And just the first half of the season was just horrible for him. Yeah, that's a good call. He'll be a minor league free agent after the season. So his future with the organization is very definitely up in the air.
But based off of the second half, though, even if he doesn't get that opportunity in Atlanta, he'll get an opportunity elsewhere based off of that second half.
Sure. And, you know, he plays multiple positions and that's always in demand. Kind of going along the idea of a toolsy player that just didn't live up to expectations, I'm going to go with Izzy Wilson. Now, not long ago, Izzy, in my mind, was a lot closer to Drew Waters' level than a lot of people maybe thought. But while Drew Waters drastically improved his swing and drastically improved his approach, Izzy Wilson just seemed to get stuck. And he ended up having a very disappointing first half with Florida. And then finally just simply got released. Now, he was picked up by the Cubs and had a pretty good second half with them for their high A team. But talk about a disappointment, especially considering the amount of raw athletic talent that Izzy Wilson has.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats now from what he had after his move. And he has an 807 OPS and a 143 WRC plus. In 74 plate appearances. So there's still time for him to do something with these tools, but the opportunity just wasn't going to happen anymore in the Atlanta organization. And it just kind of seemed like that whole outfield out and in Florida, just nothing really happened for any of them this season.
Yeah, except Trey Harris.
Well, yeah.
All right. You want to give us one more before we start talking about happier things?
Yeah, the last one I've got here, and this It's kind of an iffy one to hear anyway, because he lost his prospect status, but Touki Toussaint, and it wasn't necessarily based off of what happened in Gwinnett, but I mean, being in his relief role in Atlanta, that long relief role he'd been in this season, it just did not suit him at all. And he's either getting hammered all over the place or he's giving up a ton of walks, but eventually he got moved back down to Gwinnett, and in 10 starts at Gwinnett had a 7.49 ERA. And like we talked about earlier, if that Gwinnett playoff series had gone to a fifth game, I'm not even sure he would have gotten the start in that. I think it just really turned out to be a lost season for Touki.
Yeah, I had him down here. He was going to be my next one to say. Very disappointing. He's entered the season as our number two prospect. He was certainly in the top five pretty much everywhere, I think. So for him to graduate and get a lot of major league experience, but just not be able to hold on to it and either a starting. He was given a starting opportunity and just couldn't take control of that. His stuff is way too good to have that kind of season. It's so a tremendous disappointment. Now, that said, player development is never a straight line. And there is absolutely nothing to say that Touki Toussaint won't bounce back from this and have the kind of career I think we're all expecting him to have.
Yeah, and I think the best thing for him next season is to define his role and leave him in that role, not just keep bumping him from, now you're a starter today, you're a long reliever tomorrow, now you're going to be a seventh inning option guy. I mean, they just need to pick something and stick with it.
All right. Well, you took Touki from me, so I'm going to go down to Rome, and I'm going to choose Trey Riley. Now, he was, I think, number 19 or 20 coming into season as far as prospect. Guy with two-plus pitches, just nasty stuff. But he just was not able to fill rotation spot in Rome. They ended up putting him in the bullpen. They ended up disabling him for a while. But just absolutely very little control. And I'm not saying command. I'm saying control. He could not find the strike zone consistently pretty much all year. For a guy that they gave overslot to for a fourth-round pick in 2018, that is a disappointing season. It would be amazing if they could somehow unlock this guy because, like I said before, the stuff is unbelievable. But you have to call it a disappointment for this year.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned a game of his you attended where he was absolutely dominant one inning and absolutely fell apart the next inning, and that's kind of been the story of his season. But there, we saw enough potential out of him to where, like you said, if they just do maybe some tweaking and locking, we'll get him going. But I mean, this is although it's a disappointing season for him, I don't think this is the end of him by any means.
All right, well, let's talk about some happier things. Let's talk about our biggest surprises. What do you got for that, Matt?
My biggest surprise, this is a guy who started off as a year as a tag team partner for Patrick Weigel when he was recovering from his elbow surgery. He came back, he was put in an inning, two innings in appearance, and then Jeremy Walker would come in behind him to finish up the games. So essentially, he was basically a sixth starter for them this season. And he just absolutely took off in that relief role. He ended up this Mississippi stint with pitching 58 and two-thirds innings, only won five hitters with a 2.45 ERA. Got promoted to Gwinnett. Wasn't even there in Gwinnett for very long. He had a couple rough appearances to get started in Gwinnett, then really took off there as well. And as of right now, he's sitting in the Atlanta bullpen earning a major league paycheck.
Yeah, that's a great call. Jeremy Walker was on my short list for this as well. He's a guy that I always thought pretty highly of, and I always thought that he would probably do better as he ascended the organization. He pounds the strike zone, and I think moving to that bullpen role full time really unlocks the potential of his repertoire. He took that opportunity and really ran with it, and I wouldn't be surprised if he played a key role in the Braves bullpen for the next several years.
I think so as well, especially since they're going to pay Mark Melancon a lot of money, $14-some-odd million for next season. They're not going to spend a lot of extra money on the bullpen. So I think he's going to be part of that, at the very least, the Gwinnett shuttle, if not get actual role based off his ability to command his pitches and not walk so many hitters.
And then sticking with that draft class and that Mississippi Braves team, I'm going to go with Tucker Davidson, the co-Mississippi Pitcher of the Year. Now, Tucker Davidson's a guy that I really liked as a reliever. I wasn't in love with him as a starter. I know Baseball America really hyped him up coming out after the 2017 season, and he had a really good second half with Rome, and then had a lot of trouble in Florida last year. I thought that he would probably follow this Jeremy Walker route of eventually kind of getting moved into the bullpen at some point this season. And I thought he would excel there. Instead, he stayed in the rotation and he only had the best ERA in all of the Southern League and was promoted from Gwinnett and is really just, hop, skip and a jump away from a major league debut, which I fully anticipate happening at some point next season.
Yeah, I agree with that one as well. In fact, he may, if not in the starting rotation, he could very well get himself a bullpen spot based off the left-handed reliever situation in Atlanta. But yeah, that's a really good call on that. He just had a really, really good season. And of course, based off of that Mississippi rotation, it's hard to believe that that Walker was the first one to make the major leagues, but that Davidson may end up actually being the second one to make it.
All right, what's your second big surprise?
My second big surprise is little bit of Mississippi involvement here, but he found himself in Florida, and that would be Philip Pfeiffer. Pfeiffer started off the season in Mississippi as a reliever and had eight were just really not very good appearances. I mean, the guy's 26 years old. He got off to a bad start at Mississippi and moved down to Florida. I mean, he was at a career crossroads at that point. Being a 26-year-old in high A is not exactly a recipe for success, but he found something down there. They moved him into the starting rotation right off the bat, got 14 starts in there and with a 3.20 ERA, striking out almost 11 per nine. And the thing that really helped him is he cut his walks all the way down to 2.3 per nine innings. And I think that's the thing that really helped him propel himself to get back where he needed to get back to. I mean, he started off there, but then when he moved up to Mississippi, he did a little bit more starting there, got a couple of starts in, and then got moved up to Gwinnett, where he was a reliever there for the last couple weeks of the season. And he was doing well in the relief role after a couple of rough outings. So it got to the point where we were even talking about him in consideration for a left-handed role in the relief role in the Atlanta bullpen if things got bad enough. So I'm not sure where his career goes from here, especially that he'll be a minor league free agent, but he's definitely a lot better off than he was at the start of the season.
Oh, definitely. I was high on Pfeiffer. I think it was in 2017. He got a spring training invite for the big league club. His stuff is absolutely nasty even back then, but just could not keep the walk rate down, and it seemed to get worse and worse as time went on. And quite frankly, I had him as an afterthought going into this season. And when he was sent down to Florida to start, I had no idea, you know, what the reasoning for that was, other than, hey, Florida could always use another starter, I guess. But, you know, kudos to him for completely reinventing himself. Kudos to Dan Meyer, the pitching coach for Florida, for helping him do that. It's such a tremendous story this year. And I think at this point, they're probably going to add him to the 40-man roster.
Yeah, because he's definitely got some value now. So, yeah, with the spots that might be opening up, guys we thought might have been added to the 40-man roster in the offseason may not be playing out that way, but guys like Pfeiffer worth their way into the mix.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be a minor league free agent if they don't, you know, and somebody will scoop him up if the Braves don't add him.
Say that's the very definition of a surprise, that at the end of April, nobody would have said that about Pfeiffer at all.
Absolutely. All right, my second big surprise is the 2018 32nd round draft pick, my cousin Trey Harris, you know, the organizational player of the year. I really like this guy. Even when I was doing the write-ups back when we drafted him before he even played a game, just reading the stuff from him from Missouri, the way he kind of turned his collegiate career around, the way people were talking about him, I felt like he could possibly be a sleeper pick. But boy, I did not anticipate him playing to a 317, 395 OBP, 480 slugging percentage in his first full professional season over three different levels. What a year for Trey Harris. It is such a great story. He's a local kid, McEachern High School, just extremely well-liked, a leader in the clubhouse, and I am delighted at Trey Harris's ascendancy in this organization.
Yeah, and we mentioned about him earlier on the season when he did so well off at Rome. They're like, well, let's move him up. Let's see what he can do. Keep moving up until that he proves he can't hit that level of pitching. And everywhere he went, he just kept hitting. He moved up to Florida, he hit that pitching. He moved up to Mississippi, he hit that pitching. And I don't see any reason why he can't just keep on going.
All right, man. What you got for your third one?
That was all I had with the two there. But a fun little story about Trey Harris here. I saw when he attended one of the last Mississippi games of the season, is that when they were announcing the players to go on the field, and of course they'd have a kid accompany them on the field, and of course every player ran out to their position, they had their kid in tow, and it was really interesting. But when Trey Harris ran out on the field with his kid, he was having fun with it. He would like run in serpentine patterns and zigzag across the field, make the kid run after him. He was laughing the whole time. I thought that was just a really fun thing about a guy like Harrison, that he's just having fun playing the game as well as being organizational player of the year and doing his job.
Yeah, he's an exuberant personality and just a guy you can really get behind. All right, since you don't have a third one, I'm going to go ahead and do my third one. And it's Jaceel De La Cruz. Now, I knew Jaceel De La Cruz had the stuff. He was hurt some last year, though, and I didn't know if he would be able to get it into games and stay healthy. He did, and holy cow, what a great run for Jaceel De La Cruz this year. Blew through Rome, threw a no-hitter for Florida, the first no-hitter ever for that organization. And at the time, I believe it was the first complete game for anybody for that organization. And Nolan Kingham came up and threw three more complete games for him. But I think at the time it was the first complete game for Jaceel, for the Florida Fire Frogs. Came up to Mississippi and did well. Kind of faded a little bit at the end there, just from, you know, blowing past his career innings. But I did not, while I like De La Cruz, I would not have said that he would be in a in our OFR top 10 prospects by the middle of the season, but he was.
Yeah. And it, even though he kind of ran out of gas toward the end of the season, they started to manage his workload, let him put him on a 50 to 60 pitch count. And even then, he was still having success there at the end of the season. He'd go, he'd still manage to go 5 to 6 innings, even with that pitch count, and still be somewhat effective on that. So I think it's, he's putting himself in a really good spot for next season. I mean, in fact, he may be heading the Mississippi rotation to start 2020. And I'm sure he might be in the mix for Atlanta at some point next season.
So the next category is kind of like biggest surprises, but they're not really surprises. It's good things that happen that you were kind of expecting and hoping for, and it happened. Matt, what you got for this one?
The progress of the top position prospects, Drew Waters and Christian Pache. I mean, we got exactly what we were hoping to get out of him. Pache, it seems like every year he was working on one new thing. Last season, it was trying to develop some more power. This year, it was just to increase its game overall, take some more walks, just develop overall. And nothing changed with him. I mean, he did what he needed to do to progress onto the next level. It seemed like he was in Mississippi for an awfully long time. He was there for more than a full calendar year, but he did everything he needed to do. There, like I said, there's no surprises there. It was an expected development, and he provided the expected amount of defense as well. And in the case of Drew Waters, same situation. It was kind of a curious development that he didn't spend a whole time in Florida and he went straight to Mississippi this season, but it didn't look like he missed a beat there. He did everything he needed to do. He, of course, he had the high BABIP, but it didn't look like it affected anything. And he led the Southern League in a number of categories at the time of his promotion and developed power from the left side of the plate, at least hit a ton. They played all over the field and had great defense. It's not, of course, not close to Pache's defense, but still solid in his own right. But they got the expected developments out of them. It was good that there were no surprises, because the only surprises that you could have possibly seen out of them would have been of the negative nature. We didn't get either one of those.
Yeah, I agree with you. And this was my number one here as well for both of them, actually. It certainly is gratifying and satisfying to see the development you're expecting from players to materialize like that. Watched Christian Pache a lot now, and every year I'm impressed with him, and every year I can see the next level with him, and every year the following year he hits it. I'm really excited to see what we get from him coming up into this next year. Assuming there's not a trade or something like that, I think he's going to be the Brave center fielder by mid-season next year, and I expect him to do well at that. And then Drew Waters, just tremendous growth, not just as a player, but, you know, just from an attitude standpoint. We went from seeing him roam at the beginning of last year as kind of, you know, this guy who, you know, was talented, knew it, but if things didn't go his way, it could completely throw off his game. He could be a little petulant. and, you know, and you'd watch him interact with teammates, and teammates would kind of look at him like, you know, that's part of the game, dude, settle down. You know, he grew a lot last year as a guy, just as a player and as a teammate, I think. And he acknowledged much, you know, in the off season. I went to the Rome Fan Fest in which he was a guest, you know, and he, you know, he's a local kid as well. He, you know, Etowah High School, and he was there, and he was very straightforward with it and just really matured a lot in the course of that year. And I think this year was the direct line result of that. He grinded through the year. He improved. He stings the ball all over the ballpark. You mentioned occasionally over the course of the year how high his BABIP is. He's the kind of guy that I think will always have a high BABIP as long as he maintains this approach, just because he is so difficult to defend. You're not going to see a whole lot of shifts with him when he gets to the major leagues, because he's the kind of guy that will just beat the shift, whatever you try to put on him, I think. His development of his right-handed swing is certainly encouraging as well.
You mentioned the attitude part of it. I saw a lot of his Mississippi games this season, and I saw where you're talking about channeling his attitude in a positive manner and his energy. I mean, I never saw him sulking or anything like that, but he still has that attitude. It's like he thinks he can do anything he wants to do on a baseball field, and even if things don't go well for him, I didn't see any indication that he was letting it affect him in future at-bats or in future games. It just seemed to go very well for him. And even locally, like, there was a local radio station does a sports show on like 7 o'clock in the morning. He'd be in the studio having fun with them and answering questions, and he didn't act like he didn't want to be there or anything like that. I think a lot of good things for him. And when he gets to Atlanta, he's gonna be another guy that has that kind of energy like Acuna and Albies, that he's gonna fit right on in, and he's gonna charm the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, the amount of swagger that's going to be in that outfield between Acuna and Waters, I mean, it's going to take this city to another level. All right, my best expected development is the guy who's in the running for Rookie of the Year in the major leagues. That's Mike Soroka. He came into the season as our number one prospect. You know, coming into making that list, you know, he had had that shoulder issue. It was causing, you know, a lot of people to question, would he actually be able to meet his potential that he had obviously demonstrated in the minor leagues? I never really had a doubt. And I don't know about you, Matt, but there's probably nobody I have been more sure about coming up through the minor leagues than maybe Mike Soroka, you know, I guess maybe Acuna, but, and the fact that he's doing so well is a very satisfying yet expected development.
Yeah. The only doubts I had about him at all were related to his shoulder, just not knowing how healthy it was. But as far as his ability and his maturity, there was no doubt. There were no doubts there. The only thing that was holding him back was his health. And it looks like he's answered all doubts about that. Now, he's run into some problems here recently, but I think it's just getting deep in the season. He's getting tired, and they're starting to pull back on his innings some, so I think that's going to help him out. But, yeah, I don't see any reason why he's not going to have a really successful career going forward. And we've talked in the past about, like, who's going to be next up on the extensions list after Acuna and Albies. I wouldn't be surprised to see Mike Soroka on the extension list here at some point.
I'd love to see it.
My next one is use these guys as a tandem here. It's guys who started off the season in Atlanta, didn't do particularly well for a brief time up here, but Bryce Wilson and Kyle Wright went back down to Gwinnett after that. And they both rode the shuttle a good bit this season, but for the time they were in Gwinnett, they both did very well. And we mentioned that Bryce Wilson won a number of accolades for what his work there this season, had the best ERA in all of AAA baseball, even with the juice ball. And talked about how he's kind of had that bulldog mentality even in his playoff start, but he was very, very solid this season. And Kyle Wright had the kind of the same thing, even though he had a lot of starts and stops this season. I mean, he had two different periods in May where he went 10 days without pitching due to riding the Gwinnett shuttle, seeing the Atlanta bullpen really not doing anything, then moving back down. But he really turned it on in the second half of the season. His overall numbers aren't real pretty, but he did a little, especially towards the last, I would say, 6 to 8 weeks of the season.
Yeah, that's a really good call. I don't think I make any secret of my appreciation for Bryce Wilson. I really just love a guy that can stay in the strike zone and has the stuff to live there. Kind of like Mike Soroka, I don't have a lot of doubts that he'll eventually put it together and be successful in the major leagues. I haven't been as strong on Kyle Wright, but he really he's really done a nice job, especially in the second half of this year, finding the handle on his off-speed stuff. You know, the only question I ever really had with that with him is, would he be able to have multiple pitches of his working all in the same game and having consistent good starts? Like for him, it seemed like he would have a couple good start and then have a blow up start, and you know, and kind of ride this roller coaster. He really was a consistent starter in the second half for the Stripers. And I'm certainly more sanguine about his chances coming into this offseason.
Yeah, and the guy, those two, they had like different paths of development somewhat. Kyle Wright spent most of the 2018 season at AA Mississippi and had a brief time at Gwinnett before finishing off the season in Atlanta. And then Bryce Wilson pitched at four different levels in 2018. And I think to some extent that may have hurt him just a little bit, in that he didn't stay anywhere long enough to develop himself to where he could be really consistent like that. And I think that's what his time in Gwinnett did this year, is that he was able to stay down there, at least for the time he wasn't riding the shuttle, that he got to go out there every fifth day, learn on the job, and learn how to do work with this new baseball. I hate that when he comes up to Atlanta, especially his last start, he had his relief appearance he made recently, had a really good first inning of the relief appearance, and then just got battered around in his second inning, and that gets all the naysayers going against, and he can't do it to the major league level, he can only throw fastballs at AAA, but I don't think that's the case at all. And like I said, it's going to be, he just needs time to develop, and I think eventually he will be a success at the major league level.
Yeah, to anyone listening, if you're trying to judge a 21-year-old on their first 25 innings pitched in the major leagues, you're doing baseball wrong. I'll just throw that out there. My last best expected development of the season was the continued development of Ian Anderson. He has fully solidified himself as one of the top pitching prospects and not just the Braves organization, but all of baseball. I fully anticipate that he will move into the top 25, maybe top 20 of most top 100 prospect lists this offseason. And he has as good a shot, I think, as anybody as maybe breaking into the Atlanta Braves rotation at some point in 2020. And possibly being a top of the rotation type starter.
Oh, I fully believe that as well. He did get off to a rough start somewhat at Mississippi for the first month or so, but after when he got going, though, it didn't stop. I mean, he gets part of the combined no hitter where he struck out 14 in seven innings, and he was going 6-7 innings at most every start, allowing anywhere between 0 and 2 runs. I think he had a stretch there where he only allowed more than 3 runs in an outing, like once in about 15 starts or so. So. When he got started, he really didn't stop. I mean, he had a little bit of a rough patch when he got to Gwinnett, but I think some of that is just going to be adjusting to the new baseball, and that'll continue into. I know they've said they're going to give an opportunity in 2020 to make the possibly make the rotation out of spring training. I figure though that he'll start this in Gwinnett, but I don't think he'll be down there for maybe a month or two before he gets his opportunity in MLB.
Yeah, I agree. You have any more for this?
No, that was my third one I was looking at.
Okay. All right. So the next thing we want to talk about, what do you think was the biggest story of the year for the Braves minor leagues this year?
I think the biggest story was the concentration of prospects we had in Mississippi for a good while this season. Between the position player prospects of Waters and Pade, and the pitching staff at Anderson, Davidson, Muller, Wentz, and before he was traded, Weigel, Walker, I mean, there was a big concentration, at least early on the season, and it might be quite a while before we see that kind of concentration of high-level prospects, top 100 guys, in that same place again. And for the most part, they all had varying degrees of success. There weren't a whole lot of guys that's like, oh, yeah, that guy just flamed out and didn't do what he was supposed to do. But almost all of them succeeded to some degree.
Yeah, that's a good one. And then they just kept bringing up more guys. You know, Trey Harris came up and did well. Jaceel De La Cruz came up and did well. And William Contreras and Grayson Genista, you know, probably had a little bit disappointing seasons for different reasons. I didn't include them in my disappointments, by the way. One, catchers. When I said at the beginning of the show that, you know, that prospects don't necessarily move linearly, double that with catchers. I think this year he really concentrated on his defense, very similar to the way Alex Jackson did last year. I don't think necessarily offense was his primary focus this year, and I suspect that he will be just fine. Grayson Jennis, we've talked at length in other shows about his swing change. We kind of knew that that was probably going to happen, and it's probably not a surprise that he struggled with that for a good point of the season. Portion of the season, but even both of them, when they got to Mississippi, they definitely showed signs of improving offensively toward the end of the year as well.
Yeah, they both got off to really slow starts at Mississippi, but and Genisto was kind of up and down even for the remainder of the season, but he was still showing positive signs overall. And Contreras, I mean, he got off to a dreadful start offensively at Mississippi, but he picked it up towards the end, ended up with a 647 OPS for his time at Mississippi. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm guessing Contreras will start again at Mississippi to start 2020, and Langoliers won't be too far behind and probably in Florida. But those are two guys to really keep an eye on as far as their catching ability. But like I said, they're catching is a slow moving position here. So they might spend half a season at their current spots and then move on up roughly around the All-Star break or thereabouts.
And then my story of the year is simply the 2019 draft. Just how different it was from not only previous Braves drafts over the course of the rebuild, but how different it was just from a lot of what major league teams are doing now. They really seemed to focus on not wasting a single pick. None of the picks that normally go to senior signs in the, in the areas that from 4 to 10, went to seniors. That all went to guys that went a little bit over slot. And then the way they really narrowed down and grabbed so much of the high school talent in that area 11 through, you know, what it was about 18 slot, the area between Vaughn Grissom at 11 and Mekhi Backstrom, I think at 18. That was not only that they went after that talent, but that they were able to sign it all as well, was a tremendous coup for the front office. Now, every draft is a crapshoot. We're not going to know if this is actually going to work for years down the road. But boy, the early returns are very exciting. You got Michael Harris, the first high school pick, making it all the way to single A ball in the first year of a pro career and over a decade for the Braves. You had really good showing from first rounder Braden Shoemake, who made it all the way to Mississippi. You had a lot of positive developments for Shea Langoliers, the first overall pick and kind of the linchpin of the draft by not only taking lower signing bonus than the pick allowed for. It allowed the rest of the draft to work out the way it did. And then all that high school talent is very exciting. Vaughn Grissom, Mekhi Backstrom, Tyler Owens, Jared Johnson, Joey Estes, Caden Morton, probably some other guys I'm not thinking of right now. I would love to see all those guys in Rome next year. I don't know if Rome would win a lot of games, but boy, it sure would be entertaining.
At the very least, it's going to be fun to watch that bunch. But like you're talking about with this draft, I think the first step was just getting him signed, because a lot of these guys didn't exactly have a probability of getting signed. A lot of them had other options, whether they could have gone to college or done other things, but they got basically everybody they wanted in-house, and that was the first step. And then now the second step comes in the development.
Right. And then just the difference of going after high-level college players, Langoliers and Shoemake, even Bo Phillip, who was a widely dismissed pick in the second round. I really liked what I see from him. I know his numbers aren't really good, but watching him live, I really can see what scouts kind of saw in him. It'll be interesting to see where he goes in next season. And then some of the pitching in the 1 to 10 range as well, guys like Ricky DeVito and Chad Bryant, who was later a little bit later down, and Darian Vines and guys like that are interesting potential bullpen guys. But, you know, a couple of these guys can, you know, be the next Nolan Kingham.
Yeah, and then comes spring training next year. It's just going to be really interesting to see where a lot of these players are going to be placed. I mean, and that's not just Rome. I mean, that's going to be anywhere from Rome all the way up to Mississippi. You could see 2019 draft picks littered throughout those three levels.
All right, man. Just one last question before we call it a day. What thing are you most interested in minor league wise going into this offseason?
I think the thing I'm most interested in is the composition of the Rome roster. Based off of what we saw from the GCL, Danville, the guys who did make it up to Rome, that is going to be a very interesting roster 2020.
Yeah, obviously that's kind of my local team, so I'm very interested in that as well. I think I've already made my preferences. I want to see all the kids up here. I want to see the 18-year-olds and the 19-year-olds up here and play together. And we saw them do that in 2016, and against all odds, it ended up in a championship for Rome, and it formed the nucleus of the guys that you are seeing in the major leagues now. That was Soroka, and that was Max Fried, and that was Ronald Acuna and Austin Riley. And when these guys come up, they've all been together and they've all been through the wars together. And I'd love to see this generation develop that kind of close-knitness.
Yeah, like you're saying, the 2016 team is contributing to the 2019 Braves. You could see 2020 Rome contributing to the 2023 Braves, where a lot of these guys may be coming up and playing alongside grizzled veterans like Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna.
I can't wait for back in my day Ozzie Albies. That's going to be fantastic. All right. I think what I'm going to be looking for is this the off season that the Braves kind of push their chips in? And by that, I mean, do they make significant trades with the prospects? You've got pitching at the fifth starter / Gwinnett / Mississippi that literally is like 13 players deep at this point. Obviously, you need depth. And if you don't have, if you're a contender and you're not able to go at least eight deep in starting pitching, you're not going to make it. And we saw that with the Braves this year. You know, they had holes, you know, come up. Fulte was ineffective for a good portion of the year. Mike Soroka started off injured. You know, Max Fried, we weren't sure what we were going to get with him. He was pretty inconsistent. And we had to cycle through a bunch of guys before getting to what now is a pretty stable rotation. But without depth, you know, we wouldn't have gotten there. We wouldn't have been in a position where we could have added a Dallas Keuchel and it made a difference, right? So do we finally, though, tap that depth to add a, you know, a big ticket item somewhere to, you know, maybe take the team to the next level as far as major league talent?
Yeah, just an example with the Boston Red Sox, they're turning over their management right now, and they're saying, hey, we're going to have to probably get rid of some players because we can't afford them. Mookie Betts calmed down.
Yeah.
And it would be very expensive to get him even for just 1 year, but, I mean, the Braves have the prospect capital to pull it off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be fascinating. It's, you know, he's Mookie Betts. He's, you know, one of the top five players in all of baseball, but it's only 1 year of him, right? And I can tell you the Atlanta Braves aren't going to pay him what he'll be able to get on an open market. So how much is 1 year of Mookie Betts worth?
For a borderline World Series contender, it could be something significant.
There is a good argument to make. He may be the guy that can push you over, you know. So this is going to be a very interesting off season. I'm of the opinion that the trades you don't make sometimes are better than the trades you do. So I hope we don't lose a whole bunch of prospects, and I certainly hope we don't lose the guys kind of at the top of the list here. You know, Pache and Waters and Anderson specifically. You know, sometimes you got to shoot your shot. And it'll be interesting to see if they do that this offseason.
I think it's when we reconvene back in early next year that it's going to be a somewhat different looking minor league organization that we're seeing right now.
All right. And with that, I think we're going to wrap it up. We got an extra long episode, but I think this was a very fun conversation. And Matt, thank you for joining with me this evening. And I hope everybody has a good week.
And it's been a lot of fun.
Nothing you can do.